All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, June 5th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday. We finally made it, like I say, every day. It's just one day closer. We're on the hamster wheel. But at least when we make it to Friday, there's a goal. Friday is always a happy day for me. It is 71 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. I think we're supposed to have some rain today, and tomorrow's only supposed to be in the 60s, so we have not had summer spring yet, but soon, I'm sure. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, I titled it a couple things, but the end title was Anthrax Across America, Cyborgs, AI, and the $1 billion spot. We took a look at the growing anthrax story out of the DOD. They now have shipped anthrax that supposedly was not fully killed to over 51 facilities, three countries, and that number is going to grow per the DOD press conference that they held yesterday. One of the things that I have been looking for, and I mentioned it on two of the last shows, and it's interesting because I had read the story back at the beginning of the week, and then in the last two shows when I referenced it, I actually went to go find the story so I could post it into the notes of the show, and I couldn't find the story anywhere. And I really started to doubt myself. I thought, wow, did I misread that story? Because I had mentioned South Korea getting pissed off at the fact that we have this military base there, and it ends up that, whoops, we shipped this anthrax via FedEx that apparently wasn't dead to South Korea. And now South Korea has this massive MERS outbreak. I think we saw over 1,600 people in quarantine as of yesterday, or maybe 1,300 today. I saw 1,600 people in quarantine. MERS, if you remember correctly, was the Middle Eastern upper respiratory disease that they think came from camels, but they're not really so sure. Now here's even more interesting, the story that I found yesterday. So anyway, I did a search to try and find the story about South Korea getting pissed off at us and potentially blaming us for sending MERS as well. They're like, how do we know that this MERS didn't come from something that you shipped here? But I couldn't find anything on it. Well, thank goodness, because it was not my imagination. The only story that I found yesterday that now I'm not seeing posted here was the fact that North Korea was accusing the United States. And let's see if we can find that one. Biowarfare. North Korea was accusing us of preparing for biological warfare. And I was like, well, maybe that's what I read. But thank goodness, because I was going through the Pigmine uploads from the last 12 hours or so, and he found me the story that I had been looking for. U.S. military anthrax import angers South Koreans. So I knew it. I knew I had seen that. South Koreans are pissed. So hold on here. I'm going to connect. I want to get this one out of the way. I really haven't seen much in the way of any additional new information in regards to shipments being shipped out. So I'm sure they'll wait on that one until nobody's paying attention. But here we go. U.S. military anthrax import angers South Koreans. And they have a right to be pissed, because apparently
an American...
Here we go.
Military base in South Korea received live anthrax from a U.S. lab by mistake last week. The shipment intended U.S. forces to assist in defending troops against deadly toxins. Instead, the error has only angered South Koreans and led civic leaders to demand changes in the terms of South Korea-U.S. military relations.
As politicians of both parties have already admitted, they are aware that the status of forces agreement has structural problems that cause problems. So the SOFA should be revised in a way that does not allow something to be brought into Korea without mutual consent and approval.
I mean, that's a pretty good idea. I think if it were my country, and I find out that some other military presence that's sitting here is shipping in bioterror materials without our knowledge, and then whoops, it ends up being live, I'd be pretty upset as well.
Simply through notification in advance.
The anthrax controversy comes with the U.S. facing constant public criticism and protests over its pressure to deploy an advanced missile system to South Korea and a recent artillery accident. Also under fire is the American courier FedEx for transporting the deadly toxin, which was supposed to be harmless inert material, as U.S. officials sought to deny the error.
The purpose of the training being conducted was undertaken in Korea with the expectation that the materials sent from the United States would be inert and harmless to be used for identification and detection capabilities.
South Korea lawmakers from both sides suggest the issue be discussed at the next Status of Forces Agreement committee meeting scheduled for July. The anthrax scare is far from over, as the military lab in the state of Utah has been found to have sent the live agent to dozens of locations across the United States. But with the revelation that anthrax was also earlier sent to Australia and South Korea, comes the revelation that more shipments and recipients of the agent remain undisclosed. Frank Smith, Press TV, Seoul.
One of the other things, too, that I saw late yesterday, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find this. It's been a pretty crazy couple days. Actually, here, yes, let's play this one, too, and then I'm going to get off the anthrax stint. We're going to look at some transhumanism crap today. But one of the things that I did see is they are now saying that they've tested, I believe, four shipments, and all four shipments happen to be live. And, you know, we listened to three clips yesterday, I believe, and in all three clips, they're like, well, you know, it's a very small percentage. Don't worry about it. So the story is just constantly changing. And like I mentioned over the last few days, I mean, if there was not some great PSYOP going on, I mean, I'm going to be surprised if this does not end up in the hands of ISIS and all of a sudden we have to all line up for our anthrax injections that are sitting in the internet in the national stockpile.
Plus, Washington, D.C. and three foreign countries received the suspected live spores. That's a larger number than what was previously disclosed. At a news conference today, Deputy Defense Secretary Robert Work sought to reassure the public.
And we continue to work with the CDC to ensure that all possible safeguards are taken to prevent exposure at the labs in question, and that any worker that might have had the risk of exposure, even to these low concentrated samples, they are closely monitored. We know of no risk to the general public from these samples. To provide context, the concentration of these samples are too low to infect the average healthy individual. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the Department of Defense takes this issue very seriously because it is a matter of public health and also the health of all of the members of our department.
Joining me now to tell us more about what happened and the response is Nancy Youssef. She's the senior national security correspondent for the Daily Beast. Nancy, welcome back to the program. So many more samples of anthrax were sent out to these labs than was known before. Why is this coming out in bits and pieces like this?
Well, part of it is that it takes several days to determine which samples were sent out that were positive and which were negative. This is out of 400 lots, and from each lot comes several scores of samples that are sent to various labs. And so they're going through lot by lot and doing testing. The numbers that we're getting is only out of four lots, 1%. And in 100% of the cases that they've tested so far, it's come back positive for anthrax. And so it portends of a lot more laboratories and states coming up as recipients of live anthrax.
So there could be more coming out, is what you're saying.
That's right. At the briefing that you showed today, they said it repeatedly to anticipate more.
Now, tell us, what is it? They said today that so far no one has been infected. Are they certain of that? And what are they saying about the danger to the public?
Well, they're saying no one's been infected, but they're also giving antibiotics to 31 personnel, 9 of them here, 22 overseas as a precautionary measure. And so there is some concern on that point. But to the public, it doesn't appear that there was any danger because these are samples that are sent to laboratories often that whose technicians are vaccinated, whose facilities are well protected for such measures. And so the danger is not so much to the public in terms of getting anthrax through those shipments, but the idea of live anthrax being sent out to an untold number of laboratories, states, and workers.
So why is it being shipped out to so many places?
So what happened after the anthrax letter scare of 2001, in which powdered anthrax was sent to Senator Daschle and a number of news agencies, is there was a real uptick in funding for research on anthrax and detection methods, because there was a fear that this was going to be an external threat, a form of bioterrorism. As it turns out, it was an internal threat. And so the DOD keeps these spores, if you will, provides them to these laboratories for the purpose of doing detection research, other kinds of research to ensure that places can prevent anthrax from being brought in. For example, the Pentagon Force Protection Agency was one of the ones to receive live anthrax, and they use that to detect, to make sure that those coming to the Pentagon are not bringing in live anthrax with them.
And just quickly, finally, Nancy, are they any closer to understanding why this happened? What was the lapse?
No, and in fact, today's press conference suggested that we're further away from answers. They said that they had methods in place to make sure that live anthrax didn't go out, and yet because there's no standard practice, that everybody sort of has their own way of determining what's accepted, and the fact that 100% of the cases they've tested so far showed up positive, it suggests that at the minimum there was a fundamental flaw in their prevention methods.
You think 100% of samples that they've tested have now shown that it's live anthrax? That's the first I heard that. But they're certain, don't worry about it, they are absolutely certain, even though apparently there's no rhyme or reason between any of these facilities, they don't have any chain of command that they all follow. Don't worry about it, because nobody's been exposed. I just cannot believe how unbelievably asinine this all is sounding. And we just believe this and go along with it. And of course, we're all safe. Don't worry about it, because the military is in charge. All right, I've had enough of anthrax for the week. How about you? What I want to look at now, let's finish up the last little bit on MERS. So we find out, we find out that MERS has spread in South Korea now. It's the first time they've seen that there. And South Korea was pissed. But also, I found the story about North Korea. North Korea accuses the U.S. of preparing for germ warfare. And I saw when I was searching for the story that they also had accused us of creating the Ebola epidemic, which is kind of interesting. Kim Jong-un has a history of jumping up and down and always crying foul, always trying to threaten us with his finger on the button. I saw he was overseeing some underwater weapons testing yesterday. So that's interesting. I also saw that South Korea has now tested a missile that could hit anywhere in North Korea. So that's really ramping up. But listen to this. North Korea urges immediate U.S. troop withdrawal from South Korea. North Korea's National Defense Commission has accused the U.S. of preparing for German biological warfare on the peninsula in a statement carried by the Korean Central News Agency on Wednesday. Now, you know, take it for what it is. I don't typically believe anything that comes out of North Korea, but this story definitely caught my attention, and I found it by accident. The statement from North Korea's most powerful military body refers to recent revelations that the U.S. may have sent live samples of the deadly anthrax bacteria to an Air Force base in South Korea between March of 2014 and April 2015. And we discover now that they are going back all the way to 2006 for the shipments in general, and maybe even before that. We'll see. Quote, the world should brand the scheme of the U.S., which rules out even the preparations for germ warfare, which is strictly banned internationally, as the gravest challenge to peace and hideous crime aimed at genocide, and mercilessly punish it, the statement says from an unnamed spokesman. The recent disclosure of the U.S. introduction of anthrax germs into South Korea goes to prove that the U.S. is a group of gangsters threatening human existence. Bang! See, now, like I said, I don't typically trust anything that comes out of South Korea, but anybody who is, quote unquote, in the axis of evil and staring down the barrel of our gun, you know, maybe we should start listening to them. That first clip about South Korea being pissed that seems to have vanished off the internet as a news story that I was able to find this morning. The Pigmine uploaded, that actually came from Press TV, which is Iranian television, another of the axis of evil that, though, you know, they say that we're trying to be on nice and nice and work out a nuclear deal with them, don't think for a second that Iran is thought to be our friend in the upper circles of the echelon. It says a U.S. government and Center for Disease Control investigation is currently underway following a discovery that live anthrax may have accidentally been shipped to multiple locations in the U.S. as well as Australia and South Korea. And we also found out Canada in another story. The origin is from the U.S. Army's Dugway Proving Ground, which I believe isn't that where they did all of the nuclear bomb exploding. The recent discovery of live samples in a shipment led to a series of emergency and protocol responses, including preventative exposures for treatment to 22 people in South Korea who may have been exposed during training exercises. According to a statement from the Osan Air Base, the individuals included 10 active duty U.S. Army personnel, 5 U.S. Air Force personnel, and 4 American contract employees, as well as 3 civilian employees. As yet, the personnel have not shown any further signs of infection. Upon receiving notice of possible live anthrax samples, trained response personnel from the 51st Fighter Wing immediately cordoned off the facility, destroyed the samples, which makes you wonder, how did they do that, since it seems to be the actual process of sample destruction that is faulty from the very beginning at the source. Radiation does not seem to kill all of the spores. It says that they destroyed the samples and sanitized the facility and that there was no danger to public safety. North Korea, however, is claiming that the shipment of live samples was not an accident, but an intentional effort by the U.S. to, quote, plunge the Korean nation into a horrible disaster of germ warfare, unquote. North Korea has called for the withdrawal of all U.S. troops from the peninsula, as well as urged the International Criminal Court to punish the U.S. president, secretary of defense, and the commander of U.S. forces Korea. The U.S. has to withdraw from South Korea immediately, taking with it all of its nuclear war means and germ weapons, the statement said. The statement did not refer to the fact that the samples may have also been sent to 11 U.S. states, which this is from a few days ago. We now find that it was, I don't even remember the number of states. It was a large number of states, and they're saying maybe all 50, but it was 51 facilities within the U.S., or that the first live samples were discovered at a lab in Maryland, and we discovered in our research that the lab in Maryland is Fort Detrick, and that is where they were doing biological warfare research. While various articles referring to the incident have been published on state media, Wednesday's statement represents the highest level reaction to the recent revelations, given North Korea is the highest branch of government, NDC, where Kim Jong-un is its chairman. So there you go. I don't know. Take that for what it is. But it's interesting that North Korea is now accusing us of trying to launch some sort of germ warfare, at least in South Korea. But like I was saying, the fact that this has been shipped all over the place and we have ISIS under every bed, boy, doesn't that seem freaking convenient. So now South Korea is pissed. They have this outbreak of MERS that typically is only seen in the Middle East. And, you know, that old thing seemed very suspicious as well. It only showed up in 2012 as the first time they ever saw the disease. They think maybe it might have come from camels, but we're not really sure. And guess what? There's no treatment. Well, good old Sanjay Gupta came out yesterday and had something to say about the MERS virus, what we need to know about MERS. Let's see if Gupta can shed some light.
MERS stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. It's caused by a coronavirus. Now, that's the same family of viruses that cause the common cold. But MERS is a newcomer. In fact, we know that it first appeared in Saudi Arabia in 2012.
Now, isn't that interesting? It first just appeared out of nowhere, and they don't really know where it came from, in Saudi Arabia in 2012.
But beyond that, scientists don't really know exactly where it came from.
Surprise! Like I say, I mean, how many times have we heard in the last 12 months, especially with all these new, never-before-seen, dropping-out-of-the-sky viruses, holy shit, be scared, be afraid, be very afraid, and we don't have any treatment, and oh, by the way, it can kill you.
The camels may be one clue. Researchers say they have isolated the live MERS virus from two single-humped camels known as dromedaries.
Hey, guess what? They found the camels just like they found the infected fruit bat tree in Africa.
And we know that 3/4 of camels in Saudi Arabia tested positive for past MERS exposure.
You know, when we read about using insects as disease vectors and then those insects attack animals such as like the pneumonic plague with the fleas that were infected with pneumonic plague and then biting the prairie dogs, or we also saw with that one dog, I'm trying to remember what disease that dog had that it supposedly spread it to people. You know, well, how much of a stretch is it that, oh, I don't know, maybe we infect an animal that's in close proximity to people and then that animal is going to spread it to people? And remember, too, you know, the definition of a pandemic is once a virus passes from an animal to a human and then it is able to be passed between humans, that is the definition of a pandemic. So if MERS first appeared in camels, quote unquote, or so they believe, and who knows how it got there, and then passed to humans, is that not the definition of a pandemic, whether or not it's man-made?
But the way that humans become infected, that is still a mystery. Here's what we do know. Most infected people either lived in the Arabian Peninsula or recently traveled from the Arabian Peninsula. And that's why if you've been in an airport recently, you've likely seen a health advisory that looks something like this. We do know that MERS primarily causes fever, cough, shortness of breath. Other symptoms can include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea.
And, you know, another thing, notice how all of these newly, never-before-seen diseases all seem to mimic basic illnesses, right? Upper respiratory, not feeling very well, having a fever. I mean, there isn't any telltale sign to tell you, is it MERS? Is it pneumonic plague? Am I dying? Oh my God. Or is it the common cold? So anyone who gets infected, they're probably not going to think some sort of deadly pathogen when they first get ill until, oh, I don't know, anthrax. Once you've shown symptoms, it's too late. And oh, guess what? There's no treatment at that point. You're probably going to die.
About a third of people who contract MERS die, but we know that most of those people had an underlying medical condition. Individuals with weakened immune systems, they're also at higher risk for getting MERS or at least having a more severe case.
Now, that's another point I want to bring out. So people with weakened immune systems, you know, every single one of these, when we had that swine flu and we had some sort of whooping cough and some of these other things that have shown up in the last year, you know, when people died, that's what they typically blamed it on. It was elderly. It was the young. It was people with weakened immune systems. Well, if we go back to any of our research that we've done on GMOs, on glyphosate, on gut bacteria, we know that gut bacteria has a lot to do with a healthy immune system. So anybody who is eating the standard American diet that's loaded with genetically modified materials has a weakened immune system because their gut bacteria is not healthy. So this puts a big bullseye target on a large number of the Western population to die from any of these newly never before seen diseases, does it not?
Now, there is no specific treatment, and rather it's focused on relieving the symptoms. It includes rest, fluids, pain relievers. Now, in case you're wondering, the incubation period for MERS, that's the time between someone being exposed to it to the time they start to show symptoms, is usually about 5 to 6 days. Now, here in the United States, the risk to the public is extremely low. In fact, I can count on one hand the number of people who have been diagnosed in this country. If you do get sick within 14 days of having been in the Arabian Peninsula or having come in close contact with someone who has, call a doctor and tell them where you traveled. If you haven't been to that part of the world, you probably got nothing to worry about. You're going to be just fine.
Oh, well, gee. So because Sanjay Gupta told me so, I feel so much better. And, I mean, I'm not worried about getting MERS. It's just another one of these never before seen before 2012 now, apparently. And we first found it somewhere in camels. Maybe we think so, but we're not really sure where it came from or how it is spread to humans. So we have this epidemic in South Korea. They're not sure where it came from. I think yesterday we had read a story where there apparently was one guy who went to the Middle East and came back. He was sick and he infected a few people, but they were all isolated. But now it's spreading beyond anywhere that he had had exposure, and they're not sure why. So it's got to make you wonder that whether or not there is another source. All right, one last thing I want to talk about here in regards to pathogens. There was another story that came out a few days ago. This actually was a couple weeks ago. I actually went through the feed because we miss so much on a daily basis. There's just so much going on. Be afraid, be very afraid. Highly contagious, antibiotic-resistant food poisoning establishes presence in the U.S. So if there's nothing else to be afraid of, watch the food you eat, even if it is organic food, because there is an antibiotic-resistant food poisoning. The kind of bacteria that causes food poisoning lurks all around us, and these germs can be especially easy to pick up when traveling internationally, as well as in places such as children's daycare, which are hard to keep clean. The infections usually clear up on their own, but sometimes require hospitalization and hefty doses of antibiotics. Unfortunately, the bacteria are becoming increasingly resistant to treatment. Now, we've discussed superbugs. Superbugs are everywhere. That was the big buzzword probably 8 months ago. Superbugs, super this, super that. Antibiotics can't kill them. They put through an executive action or order in regards to funding a large amount of study now in regards to superbugs to find alternatives to antibiotics that they blame the doctors for overprescribing and the farmers for injecting into our animals as the reason. But one of the things that we discovered in our research here, and we've talked about it on the show, Dr. Huber brought it up, is that glyphosate, Monsanto's Roundup glyphosate in the soil and then in the plants and then in the animals that consume these plants tends to be a very, very potent antibacterial, and it kills all of the beneficial bacteria and allows these super resistant bugs to move in. So who is to say, and I'm going to question anyone who says otherwise, I totally believe that glyphosate could be one of the reasons why now we're seeing all of these antibiotic resistant superbugs. They are killing all the good bacteria and allowing space and opportunity for these highly resistant strains to grow as they're evolving. And they evolve very quickly as they go from generation to generation. Let's get back to the story. The latest bad news came in April when the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported an outbreak of Shigella sonnei that has become resistant to ciprofloxacin, one of the last remaining medications in pill form that can kill the germ. Since then, a Scientific American investigation shows the worrisome strain is still circulating in the U.S. a year after it first emerged. So, guess it just showed up a year ago. Again, another killer strain of something that just appeared. Shigella bacteria typically causes about 500,000 diarrheal illnesses and 40 deaths in the U.S. every year. Children who are malnourished and people with compromised immune systems are particularly at risk for developing severe cases. Symptoms include diarrhea that is sometimes bloody, fever, and abdominal pain, typically lasting about a week. The bacteria occur naturally in the U.S., but heretofore, people typically caught ciprofloxacin-resistant strains while traveling internationally. In the current outbreak, however, many people who became sick had not recently been out of the country, which proves that the multi-drug resistant bug has now established a firm domestic presence. The CDC has confirmed 275 cases of ciprofloxacin-resistant Shigella across the country since May 2014 through May 2015, according to data obtained exclusively by Scientific American. That's who this article is from. Although these figures appear small, they almost certainly represent but only a tiny fraction of the true number of ciprofloxacin-resistant cases. Shigella infections are supposed to be reported to the CDC, but a lot of people who get sick do not go to the doctor. And those who do are sometimes not tested for the presence of Shigella, let alone the drug-resistant strain. Vulnerable populations are some of the hardest hit in this outbreak, including cases linked to daycare centers, homeless people in San Francisco, and HIV-positive individuals in Philadelphia. As few as 10 Shigella germs can cause an infection, making the bacteria virtually undetectable as it quickly spreads in contaminated food or water or from person to person. Now, I didn't know that a foodborne illness could spread from person to person. I mean, maybe if, like Ebola, if you come into contact with diarrhea or puke or whatever, maybe you could get it, but that's just unusual to me. Other drugs that, and I mean, person to person then, you know, I mean, that's a big problem. Again, other drugs that the pathogen has overcome in the past include ampicillin, streptomycin, and tetracycline. Anna Bowen, a medical officer in the CDC's Waterborne Disease Prevention Branch and lead author of the April study, says that the CDC has identified some cases in this outbreak that were resistant to all of the oral treatments currently available. The next line of defense is a broader spectrum, more expensive antibiotic that must be administered via injection or in an intravenous line. Whereas labs can test for ciprofloxacin resistant, there are currently no standardized tests to identify if a Shigella infection is resistant to azithromycin, which I've taken that. And by the way, that shit almost killed me. Massive, massive reaction, where like the whole room would start spinning and my head felt like it was going to explode. So I started taking it at night and then going to sleep so I didn't feel the symptoms. When I contacted my doctor on a Monday, because it was over a weekend, she says, oh my God, stop taking it. You could have had a stroke. So azithromycin is a nasty new antibiotic. And these are pretty scary, all these new like generation 3 antibiotics. They can cause all kinds of issues. So if you get prescribed one, make sure you go online and read everything you can about it before you start taking it. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved ciprofloxacin only for adults, which is interesting because that is what they gave my daughter when she had the bullseye rash after being bitten by the tick that they identified as having Lyme. Almost no clinical labs are doing this sort of testing, Bowen says, and so patients are being treated kind of blindly since providers do not know if now azithromycin is an appropriate choice or not. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Again, like I've said over the last few days, we have Bill Gates giving bazillions of dollars to curing malaria or polio in all these third world countries, yet we have all these never before seen tick-borne diseases that have no treatment or cure. We have this drug resistant food pathogen that's now spreading everywhere. We have MERS, they have no treatment. We got all this shit. I just can't even get over how insane this is. And don't think that there isn't some mad science gone mad scientist, and we've seen it time and time again, bird flu, the 1918 flu, where they're sitting there trying to make these diseases more virulent in the lab and publishing their results. And oh, by the way, we spread anthrax all across the globe that, whoops, wasn't killed. And you won't know about it until you've long been infected and there is no cure at that point. All right, so let's kind of move off of that. I had a clip from a few days ago. We have talked about genetic modification and nanotechnology and all of this synthetic biology that they've been doing in labs, putting into our foods, putting into inoculations, putting it into the genetically modified organisms that they're growing in the fields that we are then consuming. And my biggest question is, once they get this nanotech, especially into our bodies, and RNAi would be the one technology that I'd be thinking of where they can flip switches on and off in your DNA, you know, make you grow wings if they want to. Once that shit is in your body and they've learned to control and manipulate this stuff, who's to say that at some point they can't find a way to then manipulate it once it's inside your body? Well, guess what? There is now a clip here that is titled Kill Switch for Genetically Modified Insects and Bacteria Developed Where? Yes, at the Demon Pit of MIT. So they've come up with a kill switch now, which makes me so damn excited. Let's check this one out. Oh, hold on. Hold the phone. I gotta connect back up. And maybe it'll connect. Maybe it won't. Here we go. All right. Kill switch for genetically modified insects and bacteria developed at MIT.
When we talk about GMOs or genetically modified organisms, we're often referring to the process by which our food is altered from corn to fruits and vegetables. Most of the discussion focuses on the implications of using genetically modified crops. But what about genetically modified insects or even bacteria? That's seldom talked about, despite the fact that those organisms also have large implications, particularly if they are released from a lab setting. That's exactly why genetic engineers have been hard at work. They've been building a quote-unquote kill switch that's meant to prevent the spread of those organisms. Joining me now to talk more about that is Christopher Voigt. He's an associate professor of biological engineering at MIT. Chris, thanks so much for joining me. First of all, I want our viewers to understand the rationale behind developing these genetically modified organisms, whether they be mosquitoes, microscopic bacteria, what have you. Give us some examples of the ways that these are really used to benefit us.
Well, you might be surprised. The actual industry around genetically modified bacteria is enormous. So industrial biotechnology is about a $100 billion a year industry in the United States. And much of this is due to genetically modified organisms. So many of the products that you see around you, from cups to containers to materials in your car, come from engineered organisms currently.
And as I understand it, kill switches have already been developed to confine lab-made GMOs. But the worry comes into play when you purposely release these into the wild, which is what, you know, as I understand, what they're, you know, looking at doing in the future. What are the implications of letting these organisms go free with no kill switch in place?
And she says in the future, and that is being optimistic, just know that this stuff has already come out of the genie bottle and it is floating around everywhere.
Well, we don't know. And so there's a big push right now to better understand how the technologies that have gone into synthetic biology and genetic engineering in the last few years, how this really changes the way that we view engineering organisms and re-releasing them into natural settings. There's a lot of good that it could do. For example, you could imagine engineering bacteria to clean up pollution, or fungi to interact with plants to help them grow better. But I think we have to have much better understanding and much better control as to how those engineered organisms work in the wild.
Well, in order to have control over these organisms, as I understand it, a much more sophisticated kill switch really needs to be developed. And that's what genetic engineers are working on. So I want you to go into that a little bit more. And what does that entail? How would that work?
Sure. So we developed one of these switches. And the way it works is that it's encoded in the DNA of a bacterium. And when that bacterium senses a certain type of sugar, it flips a switch. And when this switch is flipped, it produces a gene and an enzyme that then cuts very specific sequences of DNA. And so you can think of this as a delete key or an eraser, where as soon as it senses it's in the wrong environment, it then produces a protein that eliminates all the synthetic DNA.
And it's all done with a sugar. Oh my God, this is just... I can't even believe what this guy is saying. So, you know, once this stuff is in our bodies and in our environments, and, oh, I don't know, let's say that it's found a way to supplement something in your body or to aid the immune system or whatever. Who knows what they're doing with this stuff already that's inside of us and in our environment. We have a simple kill switch with a sugar, and we can just cause it to commit suicide.
And so this could be part of a larger system, a kill switch, where you can imagine when you're out of an environment, turning on a number of different genes that do different things to kill the bacteria, from shutting down its core processes to disrupting the cell membrane. And so as soon as it leaves a defined space, it quickly removes the DNA, kills itself, and no longer can propagate.
And, you know, think about it. All the research that they're doing on this, yeah, they're saying, oh, yeah, it's to, like, save the environment from all these genetically modified organisms that have already gotten out of the genie bottle. But here's the thing. Don't think that this research isn't being done to discover all the secrets of DNA and where the actual kill switches are. Don't think that you couldn't, you know, in the old days, they used to have ricin on the tip of an umbrella and stab it into somebody's leg to take out a dissident. Don't think that maybe you're not going to be able to, in the future, sprinkle some of this, I don't know, special sugar on somebody's food or in their coffee, and it starts making their DNA unravel. I mean, don't think that that isn't part of what they're doing here.
It's incredible. As far as I understand, I mean, we're already using something like this, a kill switch, now for genetically modified mosquitoes. At least it's being tested on mosquitoes to fight dengue fever. Do you know anything about that and how that's working?
I only know a little bit about that. And that's certainly one of these examples where we could do a lot of good by being able to engineer an insect, for example, that goes out in the wild and has some disruptive capability over a disease. But
shouldn't they be doing that with ticks then? Make ticks just like these GMO mosquitoes for dengue that they want to. And I thought they did release them in the Keys. They talked about it a year or two ago and everyone freaked out. And then they said, oh, guess what? Oxitec is going to release them. That was just a few months ago. But I mean, shouldn't they be doing something like that with ticks then? Let's make some genetically modified ticks that eat the ticks with all the bad diseases and wipe them out, don't have any diseases themselves, like they told us about these new GMO mosquitoes and everything's hunky-dory and happy.
We want to be able to control that, and that's really difficult as soon as you go into a real setting. And so you have to have some mechanism, whether it be a mosquito or a bacterium or anything else, where once it's out there, it can, after it has done its job, has done its good, it then shuts down.
And is that perceived in the scientific community, that particular model, as perhaps an effective model to apply to other organisms? Or is that what they're working on right now, is finding something, a kill switch, that can actually apply to multiple different organisms?
Yeah, so a lot of these kill switches that have been produced could be applied to a number of different organisms. There are always some technical challenges in moving it from one species to another. But the basic chemistry, the way that it works, is about the same. And so it's just a matter of turning the crank on engineering to get it to work in different species.
Including humans?
Developing research, and we appreciate you coming on and breaking down all of it for us. We'll have to have you back when there are updates. Christopher Voigt, Associate Professor of Biological Engineering at MIT, thank you for your time.
So, yeah, he's like, yeah, there's some difficulty moving it between species, but of course they can do it. You know, like I said, the fact that they're doing it in labs on bacteria and looking at, you know, GMO insects and whatever, don't think that they are not also cracking the code and what it would take for mammals and forward-thinking humans. So somebody dropped me this in chat yesterday. And there might be a video, there might not. I don't know. I'm going to wait until this fully loads. I think it might have been Joe Friday. Ray Kurzweil is out of CNN Money. Humans will be hybrids by 2030. We've listened to a few clips probably, 4 or 5 months ago about the new protein that they created to create alien life. We have CATG in DNA, and they also now have created X and Y. They've been able to reproduce. And of course, they're selling it to you that they can develop new drugs that will help keep us safe with these new alien DNA never before seen freaks of nature. Ray Kurzweil, humans will be hybrids by 2030. In the future, humans are going to be artificially intelligent. That is the prediction of Ray Kurzweil, the director of engineering at Google, who spoke Wednesday at the Exponential Finance Conference in New York. Kurzweil predicts that humans will become hybrids in 2030. And I mean, I think that's like in an interview we already watched by Kurzweil, he had said that that whole moving toward human synthetic, biological synthetic hybrids is already well underway, if you remember correctly. It says Kurzweil predicts human will become hybrids by 2030, and that means that our brains will be able to directly connect to the cloud, where there will be thousands of computers, and those computers will augment our existing intelligence. He said that the brain will connect to nanobots, tiny robots made from DNA strands, and I do have a story on that as well. Our thinking will then be a hybrid of biological and non-biological thinking, he said. The bigger and more complex the cloud, the more advanced our thinking. Yes, like your brains are going to be connected directly to the NSA, FBI, CIA, Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center, and every other alphabet spying agency that's out there. By the time we get to the late 20s or 2030s or 2040s, Kurzweil believes that our thinking will be predominantly non-biological. We will also be able to fully back up our brains, he says, and we are going to gradually merge and enhance ourselves. Can you say the Borg? In my view, that is the nature of being human. We transcend our limitations. Yes, like a lunatic. Kurzweil, who is known to be one of the world's leading inventors, has predicted what the future will look like before in the 90s. He made 147 predictions for 2009. In 2010, he reviewed his predictions, 86% of which were correct. That gives him a B. His correct predictions included that people would primarily use portable computers in 2009 and that cables would disappear and computer displays would be built into eyeglasses. Let me see here if this is the keynote highlights, but I don't know if anybody is even speaking here. It looks like there's advertisements. I don't know. Let's at least turn this on just for a second. If it's nothing major, I'm going to kill it because I have other stuff I want to get to.
Thrilled to be here to introduce a brand new product, Google Photos.
I don't care. This is facial recognition now in the cloud. All right, so let's go beyond this. Let's see here. I'm going to scroll up because I grabbed some older stories that we had to talk about. Here. This is talking about synthetic biology. This is out of phys.org from May 28th. Self-replicating nanostructures made from DNA. Yes, let me repeat that. Self-replicating nanostructures made from DNA. Is it possible to engineer self-replicating nanomaterials? It could be if we borrow nature's building blocks. And remember, everything they've been stealing comes from nature, and then they're bastardizing it and then calling themselves gods. DNA is a self-replicating molecule where its component parts, nucleotides, have specific chemical interactions that allow for the design of self-assembled structures. In the biological systems, DNA replicates with the aid of proteins. However, Young-Hoon Kim, Young-Wee Lee, Shosa Hamada, and Shotzi Murata, and Sung-Ha Park of Sikiwaksiwan, holy shit, University, and Toku University have designed a controllable, self-replicating system that does not require proteins. Their work appears in the publication Nature Nanotechnology. To understand how the self-replicating process works, it is important to know the different component parts. Kim et al. Designed two DNA T-motifs, R1 and R2, which are double-stranded DNA comprised of functional domains labeled alpha and beta and sticky ends as connection points. Blah, blah, blah. They designed more. They did all kinds of stuff. These components have two different states, either fertilized or unfertilized. The fertilized structures contain the features necessary for replication. This is what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show, and we mentioned it before. Self-replication of synthetic biology. Beep, 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 beep. Danger, Will Robinson. This is the beginning of the end. Self-replicating out of the box. We found out, oh, well, yeah, we're working on kill switches. Guys, this is just so bad. This is just so, so bad. They have taken control of biology, and it now is going to be extinction, according to Ray Kurzweil. We're going to be synthetic thinking organisms attached to the cloud through nanotechnology by 2030s. Says these, I don't know, do we even want to go in? It gets pretty technical. Fertilization happens when a single-stranded alpha or beta domain of an R1 or an R2 motif binds with a strand having a complementary alpha or beta domain. This leaves a single-strand protrusion or a toehold extending from the ring or from the original motif. The toehold indicates that the ring or motif is fertilized. These toeholds extend from DNA ring binds to complementary invader strands. When this happens, the hybridized structure, so they're taking some synthetic organism and then they're modifying it. With fertilization, this hybridized structure consists of a toehold and the invading strand breaks off the initial ring, and eventually, as these pieces break off due to branch migration, they self-assemble into another ring. Guys, every single day, I find a story that is even worse than yesterday. After the show, I'm not dropping these in the chat because I just have too much to find and can make the connecting points. But after the show, when the show pushes up to UCY's YouTube, I will put every single one of these into the description so you can read the articles for yourself. Here's one that I had to go back and I couldn't find it. Facebook kept hiding it on me by just showing me highlights, but I found it. Team presents induction-powered biosensor chips detecting many molecules in vivo. So if you didn't think we were being surveilled before, put on a seatbelt. It's only a centimeter long. It's placed under your skin, and it is powered by a patch on the surface of your skin, and it communicates with your mobile phone. Yes, it does. The new biosensor chip, and this is out of another one out of phys.org, the new biosensor chip developed at EPFL, which I have no idea who that is, might be a research project, is capable of simultaneously monitoring the concentration of a number of molecules, such as glucose and cholesterol, as well as certain drugs. The future of medicine lies in ever greater precision. Yes, remember we did all those stories on precision medicine and genomics. If you missed those, go back through my archive. Before the First Cup has a playlist. It should be in the title. You'll find it. Precision medicine will make your hair stand on end. The future of medicine lies in ever greater precision, not only when it comes to diagnosis, but also drug dosage. Of course, it's all about the drugs, newfangled, loaded with RNAi. The blood work that medical staff rely on is generally just a snapshot indicative of the moment the blood is drawn before it undergoes hours or even days of analysis. Several EPFL laboratories are working on devices allowing constant analysis of your blood over as long of a period as possible. The latest development is a biosensor chip created by researchers in the Integrated System Laboratory working together with the Radio Frequency Integrated Circuit Group. Sandra Kara is unveiling it today at the International Symposium on Circuits and Systems in Lisbon. quote, this is the world's first chip capable of measuring just not the pH and temperature, but also metabolism-related molecules like glucose, lactate, and cholesterol, as well as drugs, says Dr. Kara. A group of electrochemical sensors work with or without enzymes, which mean the device can react to a wide range of compounds, and it can do so for several days or even weeks. Remember, she said it goes under the skin. This 1-centimeter device contains 3 main components, a circuit with 6 sensors, a control unit that analyzes incoming signals, and a radio transmission module. It also has induction coils that draw power from an external battery attached to a patch on the skin. And there also was a story Pigmine had, a few months ago, that talks about them just using our muscle movements to generate electricity for these small biosensors coming in the future. Quote, a simple plaster holds together the battery, the coil, and the Bluetooth module used to send results immediately to your mobile phone. The chip was successfully tested in vivo on mice, where researchers were able to constantly monitor glucose and paracetamol levels without a wire tracker getting in the way of animals' daily activities. The results were extremely promising, which means clinical tests on humans could take place within 3 to 5 years, especially since the procedure is minimally invasive, with the chip being implanted just under the skin. There we go. Mark of the beast. It is coming. And then the very, very last story, if I can find it. Oh, come on, come on. Jeez, I may not make it. This has to be the most horrifying story of the week. World's first bio limb. It's in a petri dish. Scientists create living, functioning rat's leg. Yes, a rat's leg. Scientists have created the world's first lab-grown bio limb, a rat leg that circulates blood and responds to stimuli. Again, where the fuck are the ethics? I can't even get over what I'm reading. The breakthrough could lead to amputees one day regrowing their own limbs. All right, guys, we got about 25 seconds left. Make sure you stick around. It is Friday. Hey, I want to tell you, too, brand new show starting this Sunday. It's called Voice of Revolution Radio with Chris J and Al Suarez. They're going to be in the 9 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Eastern slot. He's really great. I've talked to him a few times. Make sure you catch this Sunday night. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Friday. Josh is live at 6 p.m. Eastern. We have Primer Time to play.